All right, now this is the dangerous hour because everyone's eaten. And I must warn you in all honesty, I don't have apostolic powers. So if anybody were to fall and fall asleep and fall and do themselves injury, well, I'll pray for you, as we all will, but you better keep yourself awake because that's about the limit of it. I'd like to read in Philippians 2, once again express my sincere gratitude for the opportunity to be here and the encouragement that it is to me to see so many of you. And I know that Brian and I probably did the most traveling to get here. Brian and Debbie and I did the most traveling, and yet some of you have come a distance too and at some inconvenience, and we do appreciate that. And we ask the Lord to guide you in your return to your home and to encourage your hearts in Him. Philippians chapter 2. In verse 19, but I trust in the Lord Jesus to send Timotheus shortly unto you, that I also may be of good comfort when I know your state. For I have no man like-minded who will naturally care for your state. For all seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ's. But you know the proof of him that is a son with the Father. He hath served with me in the gospel. Him, therefore, I hope to send presently, so soon as I shall see how it will go with me. In this passage, and I'll resist the temptation to dwell on it, but I would just like to point out to you the difficulty that a man like Paul had in the early days of the church, the primitive church, the apostolic church, the church full of fervor and the purity of the doctrine and the lives of the men who lived and served in those days. And yet, when he's thinking about someone he can send to an assembly to see what the condition of that assembly is, to care for their state and to be able to come and give a faithful report, a precise report of what conditions really are, not just what they appear to be, he looked around and he said, well, I have Timothy. I have no man like-minded who will naturally care for your state, for all seek their own. He's not talking about the people of the world. And it's an awful thing, really, to spend a life just seeking our own things. Very easy to do. I know that from experience. And yet, I would just like to say a word, especially in favor of the young men and women who are here today. Young people, God doesn't want you to wait until you're my age to think about serving Him. He's looking at Timothy. And remember, Timothy's the one he said to him, let no man despise thy youth. Now, don't misread that verse. He didn't say, let no man despise the youth. Some people think that's what it means. He said, let no man despise thy youth. He's talking to a spiritually minded, devoted, sober-minded, serious young man who desires to make something of his life for the Lord. And he said, you serve the Lord and don't worry about your age, and let no man despise your youth. And he gave instructions to assemblies and other places about their attitude toward Timothy as well. Now, it's a wonderful thing when we have a surplus of men like that. When is that? I'm speaking theoretically because I've never known there to be a surplus of it. And of course, the Lord is going to use every one of us in accordance with His will and in accordance with the way that we surrender ourselves to Him as a living sacrifice. It doesn't mean He's going to send you to some other place, whether He does or not. Right here where you are, right now, at this moment in your life, is the time to be the kind of person that an older servant of the Lord can count on, that you're going to be a serious-minded young man and you're going to seek the things of the Lord. All seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ. Great lesson to learn in life. Find out what the things of Jesus Christ are and seek them. And now I want to show you something about the work in Central America and introduce you to some groups of young adults who are doing that very thing, that you might be encouraged to pray for them. Well, let's see. So here we are. There we were. All right. So these countries would include, and they're not all on the map because it goes farther down all the way to Chile, Peru and Chile, and Ecuador. But these countries, I have been through Guatemala, but not visited any of the assemblies there, but Belize, Mexico, Honduras, El Salvador, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, and Panama. And the Lord is at work in all of these countries, and the Guatemalans have quite a few assemblies there, I understand, but I have not had the privilege of knowing them personally yet. The first time was in the 90s when the assembly was established in the north of Spain, and by that I mean they were able to carry on the work. There were Spanish elders there, and they continued the work of evangelizing and of teaching. And so I began to accept invitations that for all those years I had refused. Because when you're doing a pioneer work and there's nothing there, you can't leave and go speak at a conference somewhere. Who's going to carry on the work you were sent to do? So I politely refused for many years to do those things, believing that if God has sent me there to do that work, I better do it and see it done right before going somewhere else. So then some people said, well, they're talking and they're saying that you've just sort of gotten lost in the province there, and that you don't go anywhere and visit anyone anymore, and you closed up. So, well, let them say what they want. Let them come and see the work, and they'll understand what's going on here. So when the Lord finally made it possible to travel and to leave a functioning assembly there, I accepted an invitation to go to Honduras, and still going there to this day. Honduras is here. And in those days, back in the late 90s, there were about 250 assemblies already in Honduras. As you know something about the history of the work there. There were brethren who had gone a generation before and had worked and seen the assemblies established. And the Hondurans are very good at evangelism. Now, today, there's over 350 assemblies in Honduras. It's a very small country. It would have like 6 million people in it. And 350 plus assemblies. And we're going to think in a minute about why it's that way. But first of all, I want to tell you about Nicaragua. And there's a man here, this man, Oscar Cubas. His second, they have two last names. And so here a lot of us have two first name, a middle name, and one last name. There they have one first name and two last names, their father and their mother. That's the way they do it. So if you have Jose, there might be 100 Jose's, but there's not 100 Jose's those two, Gonzalez Fernandez. So you know his father's Gonzalez, his mother's Fernandez, and that's how you know which Jose he is. But at any rate, this brother was one of the ones who was in Honduras at those classes. He was one of the young men that was being taught back in those days, and he ended up being one of the first, Honduran to be commended to missionary work in Nicaragua. And there you see him. I don't know if you know who these people are. Does anyone recognize this man in the middle here? Well, that happens to be Daniel Ortega, the president/dictator of Nicaragua. And our brother was able to go and visit him and his wife, have an interview with him and give him a Bible text, he and another brother, and they were able to give him the gospel and talk to them very plainly about why they need to be saved because they're sinners. They talked to them about sin and judgment and salvation in Christ. They had 20 minutes they were given for the interview, so they got it all in. And we just need to pray the Lord will water the seed planted and thank the Lord for this. I'm just so grateful when I see men that were in those days, just sitting there with their notebooks and their Bibles, taking notes and asking questions and learning. And now he's a capable servant of the Lord and an elder in an assembly there in Nicaragua. And this is the assembly meeting there in Managua. When I first started going to Nicaragua, there was one assembly in the north of the country, in the mountains between Nicaragua and Honduras. Now there are 14. It doesn't have anything to do with me. I'm just saying over the years of me going there, I've seen them growing this way, and it's a real blessing to see how the Lord's work continues. They have a lot of youth work. They have a campground now that they've developed. And so they, several times a year, they have a week-long camp where they take in the young people and they divide them up into teams according to colors. And then they have some of the competitions in that, but they have a lot of Bible study classes and memory work they have to do. This is one of the cities where there's an assembly now where there wasn't in the beginning. They still do their baptizing in the river. And so in the dry season, when the rivers are really low, they have to go early and pile up the rocks and dam up the river so they can get a pool deep enough to get somebody immersed in. But at any rate, this is a wonderful thing to see how the Lord continues to do the work there. And every year now since 2003, with the exception of 1 year, we've had a study. This started off with 9 men who came, men from the little newer assemblies up in the north, and they wanted to study. And then it began to grow in interest. And then finally now there's a group like this of 80 to 100 people who come every year. Now they know what they're getting into. When they come, it's for a week. They're taking their time, their holiday time, and they're coming. Or it's a time when the ones who are students have off from university and, or school, and instead of going somewhere else, they come and they study. 8 o'clock in the morning, we have a half an hour, and one brother gives a devotional thought, and then we have a prayer time together. We try to give out the prayer requests, and we pray for one another in the different areas of the country. Then we have, from 8:30 until noon, we have 3 one-hour studies, or 3 50-minute studies with a break in there in the middle. And they're studying, and I tell them, you're going to have a test at the end of the week. Oh, you legalists, you're going to give them a test. Look, what do they do in public school? What do they do in universities? Do they just let people attend classes and there's never any exams? And so I tell them, now the test is nobody's getting a grade. You're not turning them in, you're not getting a grade, but we are going to go over the answers, and you're going to see what you know. And when you find out something you didn't get right, you're going to go and study it and correct it. The idea is for you to grow and learn. And so they do this. Some of them get a terrible case of nerves. They haven't studied anywhere for years. But it's been very helpful. This is exam day. Let me see. How do I get this to play? Probably by touching this. Nope. Well, it's a movie, but I don't know how to get it to play. Where's my IT man? There it is. You think it would just be click, wouldn't you? All right, well, if it's not going to play, you'll just have to take my word for it. They're all sitting there writing, taking the exam. We do the same thing in Honduras, and it's with a different, little bit younger group of people that come, and that's up in this area of Honduras. Let's see, right here, Puerto Cortes, right, it's right between there and the border with Guatemala, just in this area, a little place called Paraíso, which is paradise. Well, it's not really paradise, but it is a very beautiful area. At any rate, there are many opportunities among the assemblies in Honduras. Just this past year, it was with a regional elders meeting where they come together several times a year, and they ask a brother to bring ministry to them and to exhort them. But some of these men that are elders, this one, for example, this one, well, there's several others. I'm not going to waste all of your time finding them. But at any rate, there are also men who, like that first one you saw, were in those classes. They were studying and learning, and now they're taking responsibility in these assemblies. So they wanted to come together, and they wanted to have another meeting and have a word of exhortation. So the text we took up that day with them was what Peter said when the Lord told him to cast out his nets. And he said, well, we fished all night and taken nothing. Nevertheless, at thy word. And that was the thing we dwelt on that day with them. There's no reason in the Lord's work to do anything except for at the word of the Lord. It's never at the word of the people. Our point of reference is not the world around us. It's not what contemporary things are. The only reason we have for being or for doing is the word of the Lord, and how important it is for them to know that and to base their ministry and all of their activities in the assemblies on that, not on us and not on what is going on in other countries, but what the Lord's word says. So that was that meeting with them. And this is in the little town called Paraíso, which is really a little village that might have like 2,000 people in it. But they come from assemblies all around the area, and this is their little hall. And so we have these young adults, they begin to come. We had about 40 the first year, and then it grew a little bit more, and then it got up to about 80. And 2 years ago when I went, I saw the elders all standing at the back of the hall in a conversation like this. So I went back there. This was a Sunday evening when everyone's arriving. I went back there and said, is there a problem? Well, yes, there's a problem, brother. He said, we have 120 young adults here, and we don't know where we're going to put them all. So they were ready. They had gone from 40 to 80, and they could handle that, but they didn't know where they were going to put 120. Well, they find housing for them all during the week. Well, they got foam mattresses and had the young men sleep in the hall, on the floor of the hall, and the young women, they put them in the homes of the different believers. And it all worked out in the end. And I said, isn't that a good problem to have? I can't remember the last time we had a problem like that in an assembly in Spain. Oh, what are we going to do with all of these people? You know, but that's the problem that they have there. It's the level of interest and the growth that's very encouraging. I thank the Lord for allowing me to go and participate in some way in that. And the blessing is that knowing Spanish language, that opens up all of these other countries, and you can actually help the missionaries because they don't have to translate for you. They actually get a week off or a day off, or as it case may be. So this is 2016, the group that came for the studies. And every year they take a picture. I don't have the one from this year, but that's where I just got back from. There's the schedule for them. You can see when they start. Get up, 6 in the morning. You have an hour to get up, get washed up. And then they have prayer in groups from 7 to 7:20. Breakfast at 7:20 until 8:35. Then they have at 8:35, they have hymns and prayers, and then you have the first study at 8:50. The second study at 10 o'clock. The third study at 11:10 until just before noon. And then you have the noon meal. Then you have, there's your free time, 1 hour. These are young adults who could be going off on some vacation trip. They could be sleeping in. They could be doing any number of things. But they're coming to do this, and they realize what kind of time they're going to have. They have 2 o'clock prayer, or prayer and hymns, and then they have from 2:10 to 3, it's called activities. But what that is study time. They have to be in the hall, and we give them something that they have to do research on. They have to study in the Scripture some task. And I've been going through Romans with them, so I would give them a list of 14 or 15 questions about every section of the book that we're studying, and they have to sit there and go through this and look it up and study the chapter and find the answers to the questions to help fix it in their mind. So that's then, and then evangelism from 3 to 4, the elders in that assembly and several other brothers who help them, who are responsible, take them out and they show them, first of all, they teach them about how to do tract distribution, how to speak with people, how to visit in homes. And they take them with them. It's sort of like the massive shadowing operation, because you have 40, 50, 60 young people, and you have 4 elders and maybe there are 2 others that are helping, so they have their hands full. But at any rate, these young people are out every afternoon doing something practical. And then you have the supper at 5 o'clock, and then you have another general meeting at 7 in the evening, 7 to 8, and people from the assembly, the area assemblies, come to that meeting, and so the hall's full because you have the young people who are there for the studies, plus all the area assemblies who come out for that meeting. And by 9 o'clock, they're worn out, so it says at 9 o'clock, night's out, and lights out, and good night. And some of them are up anyway until 10 o'clock talking. They're sort of like the Spaniards. Spaniards are all-night people. 10 o'clock is when they eat supper a lot of times in Spain. And then we go to bed at midnight, maybe. But in Honduras, the sun comes up a little earlier, so they go to bed a little earlier there. But at any rate, my point in all of this is, young people, knowing that they're coming to a week like this, and that there's not going to be but 1 hour of free time a day, and they're not going to be going off forming a volleyball team or having excursions to an island or out on the beach or anything. They're coming to this. And we started off with 30 or 40 people, and the last time it was up to 120. And the brethren are just amazed that they want to come and that this level of interest among them. And quite frankly, so am I. And I'm very encouraged to see what the Lord is doing among the Honduran young people. So this is the evening meeting in this hall. And you'll see why it says Old Hall in a minute. And the evening meetings, they filled up with all the people who are there for the studies, plus the others from the surrounding assemblies, and some of them are outside the door. You probably can't see. It's dark out there. There's a group of people standing out there. There's nowhere to sit. So they stand in the doorway and listen to the message. There's another view of the nightly meetings, and here's outside the hall. This is an area beside the hall where normally they park a bus or a truck or something that they would use. And they get all of that out, and they set up seats out there for people who just listen. They have a speaker out there, and they listen through the speaker, and they look in through the slats in the window to see. There's that level of interest, and here they are. This is the meeting outside of the meeting, and they're carrying on out there. And so in 2016, after we do this every January, after that, the brethren decided on their own. I didn't know they were going to do this. When I left the end of January, and I got news that they had torn down three of the walls of the hall, and they were extending it out. They bought the piece of land beside it. This was all them doing this without any of us telling them, encouraging them. We didn't even know they were doing it to participate or to help them out in it until they were already along. You see what they did? They doubled the size of the hall. They're all working on it together. These are brethren in different assemblies, and that assembly and other assemblies around there. And they're all with different skills enough to do the whole thing. And this is the new enlarged hall. So now we're having meetings in this hall, which is on the same property, but it's double the size and brand new. And there's the inside of the new hall. And they have a nice screen up at the front now, just like yours here. And a projector that they bought to put in the hall. And they're really set up to go now. So it is really encouraging to me to see them, the attitude. This is a part of a step, I think, to maturity, when they're willing to take on these things and do them themselves. They're glad if other people will help and contribute, but they took the decision and did the work themselves to build these things. And here you see the meeting now, the new hall, the new enlarged hall, or the new improved hall. And even so, they had to set up chairs. This is for the evening meetings when the people come in. So it's really encouraging to see the level of interest among Honduran believers of all ages, but especially encouraging to me to see the interest of the young people in studying, and also how the brethren are willing to come in and work, pitch in and work to build a new hall. And now I just heard in San Pedro Sula, which is one of the bigger cities in Honduras, brethren there have done the same thing. They bought another piece of land, they built another hall, and just now, this week, I think, going to inaugurate it. So it's another step of growth for the Honduran assemblies. This is the group that we had this year. There's a few people missing, but they're mostly there. This is a different group from the other years. And some of these people will be a little bit younger, but I'm glad to see them there. And they all came knowing the word has gotten around that this is what we do. And yet, there is among them this interest to come and to study. Now, this man who's teaching them is another one of those men that was in those classes that I helped to teach back in 98, 99, the year 2000. He was in that group of people. Now he's an elder in an assembly, and he gave excellent ministry here. He came and taught 1 hour each day on the book of 1 Thessalonians. It was so encouraging, not just to myself, but to the other brethren, the missionaries who live in Honduras, and other brethren who, of course, were there. I was only there visiting and helped when I visited, but they were there investing in the lives of these men, and there they are now with putting their shoulder to the plow and taking part in the work. And this is for the sisters who work to prepare the tea. So you can see that the Honduran sisters work also. But there they're making, this is for the, what they call the, we say tortilla, you probably say tortilla, the little flat bread that the Spanish people there. They roll them out like this into balls first, and then they're all. And it seems really easy until you get one in your hand and you try to do it and get it to come out round. I tried it once and made a laughing stock out of myself. Anyway, these dear sisters are there day and night working during this week to feed. They got to feed this whole crowd 3 times a day. And plus they have families, you know. So they're there early in the morning. At 6 o'clock in the morning, they're already in there working. And they're home at night late. So there's a special crown, I believe, for sisters who labor like this. And what would the rest of us do if they weren't there? And after the first day, we'd all be passed out from starvation on the floor. So bless you, the ones of you who labor in these things. This is a sister who's in the assembly there. Her name is Ines, and she's 103. She's lost her eyesight 2 years ago, and now she's losing her hearing. I go to visit her when I'm there. She can't come out to meetings anymore. And they said when she heard that we were coming to visit that day, she told her daughter to get her up and to dress her, and to sit her there in the chair by the door. And she sat there for at least 1.5 hours in the morning waiting for us to come. And when you come in, she says right away, "Now be sure you remember to pray with me before you leave." This sister says, "We're not going to come and see you and not pray with you, so don't worry about that." But she, here she is at 103. She's been in assembly fellowship most of her life. She said, "I can't go to meetings now because I can't really walk. I'm not that stable. I can't see, so I can't read the Bible, can't read the hymns. And I could sing one by memory maybe, but she doesn't have a very strong voice left." And she said, "Now I'm losing my hearing, so I can't even listen to the meeting. Unless the preacher comes and yells in my ear, I won't get anything." But anyway, it's very encouraging to see her. I just think you should know that there are people in the assembly there of all ages. And thank the Lord for that testimony. This is another assembly about an hour away from that one. And last year they said, "Would you come have a meeting?" I couldn't. There were no free dates. So I promised them last year, next year when I come, we'll do that. So this year I got there and I said, "Well, now we're having meetings here and there. Well, I wanted to know the schedule." And they said, "Don't forget about the brethren in Baracoa. Remember, you promised them last year." And I said, "Oh, thank you for reminding me of that." So we had a meeting there, and they said, "Well, there'll probably just be our few people who'll come tonight. It'll be 20 or 30 people in the assembly." But as it turned out, and this is a brother who's opening the meeting, they have an interesting pulpit, and it's like the two scrolls with the scripture text in between them. And he's opening the meeting, and they had people from about 4 different assemblies in the area show up. And they had people outside and people on one side listening in through the window. So it just shows you how encouraging the level of interest. You can call them and say, "We'll be there tomorrow," with 1 day's notice. How long would it take you to organize a meeting here and have people attend like that? Could you do it on a day's notice? Well, they did. And some of them, you call them at 10 o'clock in the morning, and at 8 o'clock in the evening, or 7 o'clock in the evening, they have everybody there and overflowing. And they put you up on the pulpit, and they say, in the platform, and they say, "Now, brother, it's 7:10. If you come down from the platform before 8:30, we're going to make you get back up there." Nobody wants to go home. When the meeting's over, they're all standing around talking. So this is extremely encouraging. And it should cause us to be grateful to the Lord to see the way the work is progressing in a country like Honduras, and is growing also in Nicaragua and El Salvador and Mexico. In these areas where it's the Spanish language, but it's not the culture of Spain anymore. The people there have a different kind of interest and devotion to the things of the Lord. Spain is more the typical European country where people question everything and people are too busy for everything and it's more difficult to get anything done. And nevertheless, the Lord is working in Spain. It's a slower pace and requires a lot of patience and perseverance. But the problem in these Central American countries is they're outgrowing their leadership. Now, what do I mean by that? All the Hondurans and all the Nicaraguans, I'm talking about believers and the Salvadoranian people, they all the brethren can preach the gospel. In fact, when I go to El Salvador, the missionaries say to me, "Brother, don't preach the gospel. Don't preach the gospel unless we ask you to." Because these brethren all preach the gospel. They're supposed to be given ministry. They prepare ministry. And they get up on the platform and they look out there and they see one unsaved person in the meeting and they scrap their message and preach the gospel to that person. They say, "We hardly ever get ministry. And we need to develop ministry. So we want you to give ministry and to teach them how to study and organize teaching for ministry. This is where we need to grow." So this is the thing that's needed by those of us who are doing missionary work there. Not the evangelizing and the pioneer work, but the training of these men. The assemblies need leadership. They go out. Every assembly adopts an area. They call it a campo blanco, a white field. It might be a neighborhood nearby in the city. It might be a neighboring village somewhere. And they just adopt this area as theirs. And they go there time and time again. And I mean, they might do it for years. Until finally they see people saved there. And an assembly is formed there. This is the way it happens. And that's why there's a new assembly in San Pedro Sula. This is the result of the Campo Blanco. That's why now there's over 350 assemblies where there were 250 before. Since the late 90s. Because they're doing this continually. So they don't have any trouble evangelizing. They're doing a good job at that. But at this rate of growth, there are a few men who are experienced at ministry and who are students of the scripture and who've been taught how to do it. Others are sort of filling the gap and they're sort of learning and inventing it as they go, but they really need help in learning how to study and about teaching and about personal work. These are the kind of things that we're trying to help them with. So you can pray about that. El Salvador, 6 million people, and this is a volcano right outside the city of San Miguel where there's a very nice assembly. And they also have a conference every year. One year, this volcano started smoking right the last day of the conference. And the morning following, I left on the plane, and the next day they said the volcano erupted. So I just missed it by one day. And you never know, that the volcanoes are all over the Central American countries. This is the Easter conference in San Miguel. The hall is actually at the back and to the left, but it's too small. It'd be about the size of this hall, but it's too small for their Easter conference. So they have this covered area outside, and this is where they meet all the area assemblies for the Easter conference. And here's the ministering sisters again. And this is the second. You saw the tortillas when they were in their ball form. Now you're seeing them in their flat form. They're being cooked out on the griddle there. So they're preparing, and they feed the whole crowd. There. And this is another meal. They have tamales. It's made with a leaf. It's the vegetables and the meat cooked and the rice cooked, and they wrap it up in a leaf and give that out to everyone. So, and they line up for them. And one of the things you learn in missionary work is you're not going to eat McDonald's. And if you think you need to eat McDonald's or, well, I just say that because it's known all over the world. I don't know what your favorite restaurants are here, but they're not going to be in these countries on the mission field, I can tell you that. And one of the things you learn to do is to accustom your stomach to eating the things. You might have to pray the missionary prayer. "Lord, I'll get it down and you keep it down." And I remember Brother Boyd Nicholson Sr. telling me about going one time, and I can't remember, I think he said he was in Zaire visiting in a village, and a little old woman brought him a plate with cooked fried locusts. And he said that the brother that was with him told him, "If they just give you a chicken, a live chicken, or something to take home, or eggs you can cook, but if they cook a plate for you, you were supposed to eat it. You're supposed to eat some of it in front of them and comment on it." So he said, I had to pick up one of these fried locusts and eat it. And she's standing there looking at me with the sweetest smile. And he said, oh, Lord, help me not to throw this, help me not to chuck this up. So anyway, these are the stories we heard at the beginning from him. And you eat many strange things on the mission field, but look, we're still alive. It's not the end of the world. Listen to your mother when she tells you, eat whatever I put before you. It's good training. And there's a little town on the coast, Los Jiotes, El Salvador. Jiote is a kind of tree, and this village is named for that. And they have these carts, these ox-drawn carts that go out into the water when it's high tide. And they have islands out there in the bay that they have, I don't know what you would call it. I guess you'd say salt flats. We say salinas, where they let in the sea water, and then it evaporates, and they collect the salt. They put it in these big bags they call quintales and bring it in, but they wait for high tide. And so when the tide is high, the boats come in loaded. They're like these canoes carved out of tree trunks. They're just loaded. They might be just that far before sinking. They're loaded down with these huge bags of salt, and they come in and load them onto these carts, and off they go into the homes or the warehouses there beside the houses. And here's how this is how your salt that comes to your table starts out. Starts out in one of these places, and eventually it ends up sea salt being sold in a food store somewhere. But this is where they started. And this is another one that's not going to work because I can't figure out how to make the movie work. But at any rate, we'll just let it go. Here they are loading it off of these boats. It's too bad I can't show you the boat before they started unloading because it was really down a lot lower. This is the second cart load they're taking out. So they said, now, tomorrow morning at 5:30 in the morning is high tide and full moon, and this is when they're going to be out. So at 5:30 in the morning it's light like that. So if we wanted to see it, we had to be out there with them. And they're all out there working. In this village, there's a lovely assembly that was started years ago by Jack Sayward and two other brethren, it'll come to me in a minute. At any rate, he was from New Zealand. And they went into this village to preach the gospel, and they were warned not to go there before, they said, because some other group had gone in, and the people in this village had shot the man who was trying to preach the gospel. One of the men who's in assembly fellowship there said he went, when these two men came in to preach the gospel, he put his pistol in the back of his belt, and he went out to hear them preaching the gospel. And his intent was, when they were done, he was going to shoot that man and get rid of him. He got saved that night. And he's one of the faithful brethren. His name is Julio, and he's one of the faithful brethren in the assembly there. It's a wonderful assembly testimony that they have. This is Brother Craig Sayward here. He's Jack Sayward's son, and he's been a missionary there for years. Excellent brother. Now he's suffering from Parkinson's and Huntington's at the same time. Please pray for him, because the medicines that can stop Parkinson's accelerate Huntington's, and vice versa. So he can't take either one of the prescribed medications because it only worsens his condition. So we'd ask you to pray for him. I was with him 2 years ago at the Easter conference there, and you should have heard him preaching the gospel. It made you just want to get saved all over again, hearing the way he preached about Judas Iscariot and how close he was to the Savior. You could tell he was preaching like we tell young men to preach. Preach as though never to preach again, and as a dying man to dying men. And I'll tell you, brethren, he preached like that day, and it was something to behold. So do remember Brother Craig and pray for him. So these are the countries being visited so far. I haven't told you much about the others, but you get the idea from what you've seen. And I got into Chile mainly because our son went there to study, but we went to visit, and they asked to stay for ministry and then invite you back for the conferences and that sort of thing. There's a wonderful work going on in Chile by different men, Dave Rogers, for example. One of them, and other brethren who are there laboring. All of these brethren are trying to do the same things we're talking about now. They're trying to raise up young adults who will be responsible for the work in future years. And I think that's really, you're getting the idea, that's the emphasis we're
trying to bring before you. Pray for these brethren who are carrying on this ministry, and pray for these assemblies, and pray for these young adults, that the Lord will preserve and that He will enrich the work being done in their lives and bless it for His glory. Thank you.